Welcome to the Medical Advantage Podcast, where you can hear healthcare professionals, expert consultants, and industry thought leaders discuss the exciting new ideas and technologies that are changing the business of healthcare. Tune in to each episode as we hear from some of the most innovative minds in medicine about the future of healthcare and how your organization can stay profitable, efficient, and on top of industry best practices.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Medical Advantage Podcast. I'm Bill Riley, the Director of Marketing here at Medical Advantage. I'm filling in today for our usual host, Selena Dussault. Thank you for joining us. Today's episode, I'm very excited to announce our featured guest, John Lin, the editor and founder of Healthcare IT, a longtime EHR consultant, specialist in all things healthcare IT related. John, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Bill. I'm excited to have this discussion.
Excellent. Yeah. So am I. So, John, you've got an extensive background in healthcare in general, starting with your Healthcare IT Today podcast, which actually is where we found you. We're big fans of your podcast. You've got thousands of healthcare IT related articles over time. Your partner Colin Hung, very highly regarded with your ability to take what can sometimes be rather dry material and make it interesting. So congratulations on that. We appreciate that. But beyond the podcast, you have many other properties. Can you give us a little bit of background on your portfolio?
Yeah, of course. So Healthcare Scene is our overarching company and organization. And within Healthcare Scene, we have two communities. And we like to talk about them as communities because it's really about bringing a community of people together to share, to learn. Obviously, we lead the discussion, but in a community, everyone can help everyone. So that's how we kind of look at it. In our two communities, we have our Health IT community, which you described. We have Healthcare IT Today, which has over 14,000 articles that have published. We actually have three podcasts, one that I do. We have a CIO podcast. We have an interviews podcast, basically health IT content for the health IT professional, for practices that want to understand how to apply technology to their organization. And we also do Twitter chats, the HITSM Twitter chat, HCLDR. We participate in a lot. And then we also do events. So at Expo.Health, we do health IT events for people that want to understand technology and to better know how they can utilize technology to improve their organization. And then we have another community called the HITMIC community, which is our healthcare and IT marketing community. So it's a community of healthcare marketers that come together and say, how do I market my practice? How do I market my IT solution to practices, et cetera? So it's basically, what are the marketing skills that I need to be able to market more effectively in healthcare? Certainly there's overlap with other industries, but healthcare is pretty unique. There's certain things I can't do or things I shouldn't do or ways that I could actually cause problems if I do it wrong. So that community, it has a publication at hitmic.com as well. We do conferences, we do Twitter chats, et cetera. So those are our main two communities.
Excellent. And on the marketing topic, that's something that I would like to come back to a little bit later in our discussion. But before we get there, why don't we start broad? I think you've got a unique vantage point onto the healthcare in general. So I'd love to get your thoughts on just the latest and greatest. I know that you've been a speaker at the HIMSS conference many times over the years, and I know you were just there a month or so last month in Vegas. Looks like you were very busy attending the event yourself, doing a lot of video interviews and other things like that. So let me just ask, maybe we could start there, you know, your sense of the event, maybe starting with the highlights, the topics, the ideas, new technology that stood out to you.
Yeah. So, I mean, the event was somewhat muted, I'd say, obviously because of the COVID Delta spike. And so, you know, I think they, I forget if it was 18 to 22,000, somewhere in there was the number, but that included virtual attendees, whereas usually it's 45,000. So, you know, if for any other event, 10,000 people in the right place is awesome. Event for Hymns, it was quite different and felt interesting, but the people that were there were really engaged, and you had a chance to just sit down with them and really engage with them and talk with them and understand, you know, sometimes commiserate at what we all went through with COVID. So it was good in that regard. And, you know, the fact that they held an event in a, you know, safe way, at least as safe as possible, it portends good for the future that we can hold other events. But as far as topics that came out of it, I would say the biggest topic I saw was around automation. It's how do I automate a lot of the tasks that need to be done? And we see that being applied across a wide variety of things, whether it's your revenue cycle. How do I automate the revenue cycle to improve, you know, my collections because cash flow has become so important to my organization? Or whether it's how do I automate the documentation and the clinical documentation using something like Ambient Clinical Voice or something like that to be able to automate that documentation, which is such a burden on healthcare organizations, or, you know, whether it's talking about how do I market my practice and how do I automate that? Because I'm a doctor, I'm a practice manager, I have enough to deal with. So what can I do to automate that effort and do it effectively? And sure, I want to be involved and I want to understand what you're doing with my brand. That matters to me too. But how do I automate that to make sure I'm getting a ton of Google reviews or Yelp reviews or Angie List reviews, whatever, as part of my marketing effort? So automating that. There's another one that I think is really strong, which is around the digital front door, which kind of plays into a bunch of those as well. And that was another interesting topic that COVID forced to the forefront for so many organizations. And now we're saying, okay, now how should we really do this long term? Because patients now expect a different digital experience. I can't just rely on the waiting room to do what I'm doing. I need to provide a digital experience because every single restaurant's doing this. I mean, for goodness sakes, the DMV is doing this. If the DMV can do this, I should be able to do this as a practice too. So I think that was another big topic is like, how do I do this?
Fantastic. Fantastic. What about the flip side? Were there some things you were expecting to hear about and maybe didn't see?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't hear one mention of blockchain, which is shocking, right? I thought for sure the blockchain cryptocurrency people would be all out, but it kind of disappeared this year. I don't know why. That was interesting. There was less cloud discussion, but I think that had to do with many of the large cloud vendors pulling out because of, you know, corporate COVID restrictions. So I don't know if that was, you know, I can necessarily say that's a huge trend, right? It certainly was less conversation there. So I think those are a couple things. I think it is, certainly I have a biased perspective because it's who do you run into, right? The nice thing is I think we see also people talking more about the tangible value. So maybe that's the thing that's missing, you know, a little less hype and a little more, hey, here's what we actually did and accomplished. And so that was a good change that we didn't hear as much of, right? Where it's like, oh yeah, we're working on some AI to help you solve something. And you're like, what AI? And that's not really AI. And wait, you don't really know if it's going to work. You don't have a practice. Okay, next, right? So I think that was a change is that the maturity of the organizations and their, you know, what they've been able to accomplish has been good as well.
Very good. Very good. So why don't we, from there, let me just pick up on some of the things you just mentioned. When you were speaking of automation, I think all the examples you mentioned could be applied to a traditional ambulatory, you know, internal medicine, primary care kind of practice. And yeah. I want to talk about that a little bit. Many of the clients that we Medical Advantage serve are these ambulatory practices and specialties, and we see them under just enormous pressure from all different angles, whether it's COVID-related, whether it's new competition, new types of competition, the private equity MSO trend, depending on the location. So I'd love to hear your perspective on any of that, all of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's interesting about this is that COVID is probably the least of their concern. I mean, it was challenging for a time period, but I think they figured it out. And I think we're back to a more normal from a ambulatory practice perspective. You know, there's some marketing to do, there's some messaging to do, but I think all of that is pretty manageable. What's harder to manage is all of the people that are coming after ambulatory practices. And in many cases, they're coming after the low-hanging fruit of those ambulatory practices, which is where most of the profit is coming from. So whether, you know, like, let's look at some of the macro trends. Walmart, you know, even Dollar General announced an effort to put practices in their stores. And they're doing this in a big way, and they have money to spend. And guess what? They don't need the margins that a regular ambulatory practice needs. Because if you're in the store, that's a benefit to them, and they're going to make money off of you being in the store. They're going to make money off of the goodwill that you're doing. So they can do a different business model than you can. Now, they're not going to be as comprehensive and different. So, you know, they're going to, but like I said, they're going to eat off that really easy patient that, you know, just has a cold or flu and comes in and, you know, you get paid quickly, you diagnose it quickly, and they're out. That's going to be a problem for many practices. So that's one macro trend, is kind of the retail side of things. The other one, like you said, is private equity coming in and buying it up. Now, you have to think, what does private equity do when they go into a thing? They buy it up, they squeeze the margins, and they go aggressively marketing after, you know, after it to grow the base. And then they squeeze the margins and they sell, right? I mean, that's just the nature of private equity. You know, we won't get into whether that's good, bad, evil, or otherwise, but that's what they do, right? So they're going to come in and they're going to aggressively go after the market because they want to own the market. And practices are going to have to think about that. How am I competing with these private equity groups that are investing in to grow and to own that market, right? And then I'd throw in, you know, kind of a third one, which is the concierge kind of DPC, direct primary care. They're coming in where people are saying, let me just pay cash for this and let me disrupt this model completely. In some ways, that one can be synergistic with many of the, especially the specialty care, because they're largely focused on primary care. But they're coming in a big way. And, you know, I don't know. I am a little torn on that one scaling up across healthcare. I think it could still focus largely on the affluent communities. I don't think it's going to scale much beyond that. So maybe they're less of a concern. But here's a bigger concern, which is the last group I'll highlight here, and that's the Amazon Cares of the world, the employer healthcare, which is a mix of telehealth, primary care through secure texts. And so, you know, text-based primary care coming in, and they're going through the employers. And so the employers are going to pay for it. And that's going to eat into the margins of practices as well. So you combine all those four forces and you're like, wow, it's a tough time to be in a practice. I got to compete with them. Unless you live in a place where you're the monopoly and you're the only one, maybe you're okay then. But if you're in if you're in a big city where there's options, it's gotten really competitive.
Yeah, we agree. We've seen the same. And, you know, it's interesting. It kind of depends on where an individual physician or a group of physician owners are in their own careers. You know, we've had some that very much see this as a competitive threat, and they want to do everything they can to be competitive in their market. We have others that maybe they're towards the end of their careers.
Sure.
The COVID scenario was exhausting for everyone, and maybe they had thoughts of retiring in 3 to 5 years. COVID has really squeezed them, and now they're thinking about, you know, they might just be done. So for them, the private equity initiative is not a bad thing. And we get into discussions around, okay, what can I be doing in the next 18 months to increase the value of my practice such that, you know, these people are calling me. I don't know what to say exactly, but, you know, in the time I have, you know, what could I be doing to increase my value when ultimately I do sell? So,
With every challenge, there's an opportunity, right? I mean, and don't get me wrong, practices have an opportunity as well, because all of the other organizations I just described are totally impersonal corporate, you know, juggernauts, if you will, right? Yeah. Whereas you as a practice have something they don't have, and that's that personal relationship. But here's the thing, if it's about personal relationship or convenience, convenience is a challenging competitor. So you need to think, okay, how can I leverage my personal relationship and convenience and be able to, you know, fight back against them? Or to your point, what do I need to do to really accelerate my practice so I can take advantage of being acquired by private equity? You know, those are opportunities that are available to practices today.
Very good. Very good. So I'd love to take your example as a brilliant one. You know, if the DMV can make it easy for a consumer to engage, you know, historically, why is it so difficult for me to confirm an appointment with my you know, local physician or my practice? So let's jump into that. This idea of practices marketing themselves and leveraging the digital technologies, whether it's website or other tools to get into this space. So why don't we just start, you know, what are you seeing, John? Are there trends or other things that you could point to?
Yeah. Well, I mean, to step to your first question around why, you know, why didn't they do this, right? And the answer is they didn't have to. Like, let's be honest, there was so much demand that there wasn't a need to. And so it wasn't necessarily all that competitive. You opened the practice, you put MD up on, you know, you put on your title and you're on the insurance list and they'd come, right? And that's the shift that I think we have to think about is, okay, if you build it, they may not come anymore, right? Yeah. You have to do more work to market your practice. And I look at marketing from a much wider angle. It's not just, am I buying ads or am I, you know, doing things like that? No, I'm not even sure that's the right approach, right? Instead, it's more about what am I doing in my practice to make it special? Because we know that the number one referral source in healthcare is a referral from a friend. So what am I doing in my practice to make the experience special for patients so that they hop on Facebook and they say, OMG, what is this? I checked in digitally for, you know, my practice and I was seen in 15 minutes. I didn't have to wait in the waiting room at all, right? Like, that is genius marketing that is way more effective than, oh, I'm going to buy a billboard or something, right? So I think that's where you have to start in your marketing efforts and saying, what experience am I providing to my patients that's going to be so memorable that when I send them a thing to say, hey, will you review me on Yelp? They say, yeah, of course, this experience was amazing. And so I think that's what people need to start thinking of is it's not just, okay, where can I spend some dollars on social media or how do I upgrade my website so that it's prettier and markets me better? Or where can, you know, should I be paying for the yellow pages, which, you know, we did that in the past, right? And it was pretty effective. Well, these days, it's about the experience you create and then how that experience translates to the various social sharing platforms that exist. And that's, I think, the biggest shift. And then, you know, to your point and to the discussion before, it's much more competitive now. And the consumer is much more empowered to know what your experience is like, that they're going to make a different decision, you know, to go with maybe something that's more convenient or that's a better experience than maybe someone who, you know, is, you know, local to them or whatever. So that decision-making process has changed and you have to be proactive in marketing how you approach patient care.
Yeah, very good. Completely agree. I also think there is, we can look at this from a patient demographic or age group perspective. And especially if we look at young adults out of college, starting their careers, coming off of their parents' medical benefit, you know, getting out on their own. They don't have that history of knowing that, you know, that for the local physician, you know, the patients come to me, you see, I've got a full waiting room and you schedule an appointment and that's just the way it is. I think these young adults from other parts of their life, whether it's, you know, reserving a rental car or making a dinner reservation or going on vacation, you know, there's a certain expectation around easy and to your point, the best imaginable customer experience or you know, great service. So that's a great perspective.
And demographics do play a role, and you're 100% right. The long-term trend is even more stark, right? Like, if you look long-term, the next generation, I mean, even my generation, which I'm not all that young, right, has an expectation that is different when it comes to the experience that I want and what I'm willing to do, and maybe even switch providers because you don't provide the experience I want. We saw it in banking. I mean, I wouldn't have gone, you know, when I started my banking in college, if they didn't have online services, I wouldn't have gone to them. And I made that decision because of it. Of course, now everyone has it, right? Yeah. Well, we're going to see the same evolution in healthcare. People are going to say, wait, you don't have online self-scheduling? You mean I have to call and wait on the phone line? I can't call. I'm at work. I want to just schedule the appointment, right? So it is a change of mindset for that generation. But I wouldn't downplay the senior population either. I mean, COVID forced this to some extent, but they're much more tech savvy than people want to admit. They're able to do a lot of things online that it's kind of a myth that they aren't able to do the stuff online. And then to add to that is that often it's not the senior that's doing it. It's me, right? Helping my mom that, you know, needs to get care. And I'm going to go online and review the doctors that my mom's going to get, right? So even if the senior can't get online, the children of those seniors, the caregivers of those seniors, they're the ones that are going to do that work. And they're going to review, oh, this doctor doesn't have a good bedside manner, right? And they want a good patient experience because they have to be the caregiver and they got to get back to work or back to their kids, right? So they're going to be really specific about wanting that good experience because they're helping their mom or their dad get the care that they need, and they need it to be efficient so they can get back to their lives. So, you know, let's not underestimate how important this is across every demographic, not just the next generation.
Very good. So, John, can you give us some examples of maybe it's in the automation category that you mentioned earlier, maybe it's in the best imaginable customer service category of, you know, whether it's a technology or best practices that in your mind, if you imagine a leading practice who's leveraging marketing to the fullest extent, if you had some examples you could share.
Yeah. So let's go through this digital front door, right, that we see evolving. I think it highlights a number of examples of why this needs to happen. So here's the start that we kind of briefly touched on. I need to be able to schedule an appointment online. We need to be able to do this. And, you know, I understand the fears around that. But guess what? There's a lot of people who have dealt with this solution, this problem, and there are solutions out there to be able to allow for online self-scheduling. And yes, it takes into account all the things of what if they're going to schedule too long, or what if they schedule too short, or what if they double book, or what if they do that? Yeah, they figured that out. It's possible, right? So that's the first step, right? I mean, being able to schedule online is a powerful thing. Now, how am I going to fill out the forms? Should I be sitting in the waiting room filling out these forms and that I don't even know the information for? Come on, are we kidding? Like, send them electronically, let them fill them out from their own home. It turns out that's better for care as well, because the accuracy of the data is better when they fill it out from home rather than in the waiting room where they have a purse full of all the drugs that they're taking and they're trying to write what drug they're taking. Like, that's not good at all, right? And then just to your automation point, backfill all that information for them. If you already know the information, stop asking it again. backfill it for them, let them verify it, let them update it. That's fine. But, you know, those automation tools are there. Then you talk about, how do they get to the office? Do I need to come to the waiting room and sit? And how am I communicating with them around it? Did I tell them there's three people in front of them in line? So yeah, maybe you do have time to go get your Starbucks before you come in, right? Like, that makes for a great experience. You know, even if they do have to wait 45 minutes, them knowing that they have to wait 45 minutes because there's six people in front of them is still a powerful way to change the experience for the patient. And then you work through there. I mean, turns out all these solutions actually automate the workflow for your staff too, if you choose the right solutions. I mean, the problem for many organizations is that they're so built, their processes are so built on paper that they don't know how to get away from it. But you can do it digitally and have those processes, you know, get shifted to digital, and it actually makes you more efficient. It makes the life easier for the nurse. And if the life's easier for the nurse, if the life's easier for the doctor, the patient has a better experience because the nurse isn't frustrated and angry and the flow's bad and the doctor's like, this is taking me too long to do. So that's like another example. And then, you know, post-discharge, you know, if you've started with an initial digital patient experience, now you can leverage that in discharge. And whether that's collecting the payment, which is really important, especially with high deductible plans and patients being more responsible, how you collect that payment can be integrated with that digital communication that you started before the visit. And then here's the one you'll like best from a marketing perspective. How do you drive them to do reviews of you? It turns out it's really hard because a patient, when they finish a visit, says, you're dead to me, right? And they move on with their life. And that's the ideal, right? Assuming they've gotten the treatment they needed, they feel healthy, they don't do it. But it turns out if you use the right digital tools, you can drive as many reviews as you can imagine into the review site. So whether, you know, you choose whether it's Google because they've started really dominating that with locations and stuff, or whether it's Yelp if you're in San Francisco. If you're in the South, you can do Angie's List. You know, using those digital tools to drive those types of reviews is a powerful marketing technique. Which doctor do you want to go to? The doctor who has 10 reviews and 3/4 of them are negative, or the doctor who has 200 reviews and 3 of them are negative, right? That's what we're talking about when from a marketing perspective. But here's a little nugget for you. It's powerful from a marketing perspective, but think about how cool it is for your staff. Staff usually only hear about the patients who are complaining, who go up to the doctor, they complain, they argue, they're so angry about whatever happened, often not even their fault, right? And that's all they hear. Well, if you drive all these reviews, and the good reviews, the people who had a good experience finally share because you asked them to, and there's some incentives you can do there. When you do that, it helps the staff. They say, oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, it helps staff morale to see all of these positive reviews rather than just the negative. So I think that's the other kind of like gold nugget of doing this, is that it's great for marketing, but it's also great for staff morale, which helps in so many ways.
Very good. Very good. We could do this all day, John. That brings us about to our time. So with that, I'm afraid we got to wrap things up for this session. Before we go, though, John, can you tell our listeners what's the best place where they can find you?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think for practices, the most valuable thing is check out healthcareittoday.com. You can subscribe to the email list. You can check out the podcast. You can see the latest that's happening there. Of course, you know, be sure to follow me on Twitter. If you're on Twitter, @TechGuy, easy to find. You know, I was early on, so I got @TechGuy. That's a fun one. But yeah, definitely reach out to us if you have any questions. We love helping people. If you need help with something, if you want access to content, we've probably written about it. So we're happy to share, you know, those insights and perspectives, or if we don't know, maybe connect you to someone in the community who can.
Okay, very good. So with that, I think that wraps us up for this session. John, thanks again for joining us today. To you, our audience, thank you for giving us some of your time. We hope you found this discussion useful, and we hope to see you again at a future session. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Medical Advantage Podcast, where we discuss the ideas and technologies changing healthcare and what they mean to your organization. For more information, visit us at medicaladvantage.com and make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss a show.